Welcome to Season 4 of White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life. Let's discuss dreams, rituals, intuition, afterlife, angels, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. Season 1 featured interviews with some of the world's leading scientists researching consciousness, and Season 2 and 3 built on that solid foundation by talking to authentic spiritual experts, authors, and practitioners. And the bold theme of this season is truth, whatever that means. I hope every episode offers you much needed inspiration, meaning, and comfort, and perhaps even a little joy in these challenging times. So, now the scene is set, allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot together on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores to see what magic lies beyond the material. Thank you for arriving safely on White Shores, a far green country under a swift sunrise. My guest today makes his second appearance on this podcast. His first hugely popular episode in Season 2 ignited such a positive and strong reaction, and there was so much more I wanted to ask him for you, I just knew I had to invite him back. I'm thrilled he agreed, because of all the guests I've had the honour to speak to on White Shores, he's perhaps most in line with this season's theme of seeking your inner truth. When you hear him speak, you will understand what I mean. This man is utterly authentic. Truth is who he is. When you listen to him, it's impossible not to be moved and inspired by his example to speak with integrity and honesty. Of course, speaking your truth can make you feel very vulnerable, and many of us put on masks, fearful of being rejected, criticized, or hurt. We think of vulnerability, showing who we truly are or how we feel, as a weakness. But if you get anything out of this interview, I hope it will be to show you that letting others glimpse your vulnerability, as he does, is being brave and strong in the truest sense of the word. Our conversation in this episode is wide-ranging, but we do touch on the spiritual theme of forgiveness. Forgiveness is essential for personal transformation and spiritual evolution, and I don't think I have paid enough attention to its importance in my books, although I do explore it in a deeper way in my latest title, The Truth About Angels. We all know to err is human, but to forgive is divine. But how to forgive when someone has hurt or exploited you? Should you turn the other cheek? How do you marry forgiveness with respecting your own worth and your boundaries? Such big questions. I don't know all the answers, but I do know that when others hurt, criticize, reject, or treat you unfairly, so often this is about them and not you. They deserve your compassion, not your anger, because how they treat you is often a reflection of how they feel about themselves. But if you still struggle to forgive when you've been hurt bad, try to remember that forgiveness is not forgetting. It is simply releasing that person's energetic hold over you and sending them compassion so that you can then focus on your own healing. As long as you can't get let go, they still have power over you. Don't give over any more of yourself. Try this exercise for me. If there is animosity between you and someone, try sending them some positive thoughts over the next few days, however hard that is. See if it makes a difference, if not to the relationship, but to your own well-being. And finally, please remember you can't control what others do, think, or feel. You can only control what you do, think, and feel. You have absolutely no idea what is going on behind the scenes in the lives of others, what makes them behave the way they do. You've got to let go and trust that if you focus more on nurturing, healing, and loving yourself, your other relationships and your life will just fall into place. Returning to my awesome guest now, along with his truth, his compassion, his humility is another gift he brings. You wouldn't know it because he doesn't shout about it from the rooftops, but he's a BAFTA-winning screenwriter who counts the likes of Orlando Bloom and director Guy Ritchie among his colleagues. But when he spoke to me, he gifted me his absolute focus. That's another powerful thing he teaches. Being present for others is the most wonderful and true gift you can ever give them. I really hope as you listen to my guest today, you will feel his presence and feel seen and heard by him, as I did. And please do stay tuned after the interview for a musical gift in line with the theme of finding inner courage, compassion, and truth, the theme of this episode. It's a very well-known piece of classical piano music that never fails to move and inspire. And it's played, as always, by my son and Royal College of Music scholar Robert, who is also producing this podcast. You may recognise it as the theme of my Tuesday's Angels meditation on White Shores. That's a previous episode of White Shores that you may want to check out. There's a beautiful musical meditation for each day of the week. Music, for me, is the language of angels. It unites the creative and logical parts of your brain as you listen and can bring you some much needed inner peace and harmony. And on that divine note, it's high time now to meet my guest, a genuine truth seeker. If you would like to find out more about my books, warning, I'm a serial spiritual writer, as well as my features, media, mission, and talks, please do visit www.teresachung.com and subscribe to my newsletter for updates as well as free gifts and incredible stories to your inbox. If you have any questions, insights, or stories to share, please email me at my trusty angeltalk710@aol.com email or message me via my author pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. I aim to reply to everyone in due course. Season 1 of White Shores can be found on the podcast page of my website, and all seasons can be found wherever you download your podcasts. Be honoured and grateful if you could leave a review, as it helps spread the word that spirit is real. Walking beside me today on White Shores is Jeff Thompson, a BAFTA-winning writer, filmmaker, teacher, and martial artist. He has written a wide range of books on self-help, spirituality, self-defense, and martial arts, and many scripts for film and stage. He was a hugely popular guest in season 2 of White Shores, and that was largely down to his no-nonsense, authentic approach. It was like a breath of fresh air. I got so much feedback. Thank you, Jeff. In that episode, which I strongly urge you to go and check out if you haven't listened to it already, he was talking about the publication of a book I can highly recommend called The Divine CEO. What a title. I do urge you to listen to that episode. I learned much of value from him in that episode, and so I jumped at the chance to include him in this season, season 4, which is the theme of truth, because that's what this inspiring man is all about, being authentic, true, and real. I'm just thrilled he's here again to share his illuminating perspective. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Teresa. Lovely to hear from you again. And thank you for inviting me. I'm really grateful.
Thank you. As I said, the reaction was amazing because you just came in like a breath of fresh air. There just tends to be a lot of waffle and in the New Age spiritual movement. And you're just no-nonsense, direct manner. It just really struck a chord with my listeners. So thank you. How have you coped 2020 or in 2021 now with the lockdowns and the pandemic? How are you?
I'm very good. It hasn't affected me, to be honest. I'm very aware that people are suffering, and I wouldn't want to be arrogant about that, because I see it. I've seen people who have suffered from it. I'm so centred in my work and so centred in my life. I've been sort of impervious from it. I always tell it this joke that my wife has been socially distancing for 20 years and I've, I've been socially distancing for the last five. I chose to go into a kind of hibernation for 5 years, into a kind of exile. I had a calling some years ago when I was working at the National Theatre to reduce everything in order to go through another period of regeneration to get closer and closer to the centre. So I kind of had a deliberate exile anyway. So I've kind of been socially distancing from everybody anyway for about 5 years. So it never affected me that much. My wife is a loner. She's a quiet girl. She, you know, she's not one for mixing anyway. She just likes her space. So it hasn't, I'm very grateful to say it hasn't affected us very much, other than that it's made me feel even more urgent, and much more urgent need to put out the things that come to me, the things, not just the things I've learned, but the things that, you know, I need to learn, the things that I'm intuiting.
Absolutely. And it's forgotten, actually, that there are a lot of introverts, I think, or people who prefer a more contemplative life, who have actually found the lockdown, maybe enjoyed it a little bit too much, that the pressure's off. I mean, especially at Christmas, true. You know, people feel that they've got to go and see someone, do this, do that. And it's like, I can just politely say, I can't.
I'd love to, but I can't. There's a,
there's
a lockdown. So, it's, I started doing that. I started refusing invitations and not turning up the things that I wasn't centred in, probably 25 years ago after my first awakening. My awakenings have been very gradual, but the first one I just was able to see true. So I just stopped turning up at places where I knew I wasn't centred. I found myself going to things and doing things that, you know, that was societally expected, but they weren't congruent. So I just let go of all that, even with my own family, and I just started to do the things where I was congruent. So instead of getting together with big parties of family where everybody was looking at their phone and, you know, wondering how long it was respectable before they could move, I just stopped doing that, and I started to meet my kids on their own, one at a time, and I made myself very present. And I walk with my daughter yesterday. We disappeared the world for 2.5 hours. It was just me and her. We walked, we had a coffee, and we chatted, and it's a very, very centered experience. So I started to contract, get rid of all of the things in my life that weren't centered, that weren't true, and contract them. So I was only ever turning up where it was congruent. As a kind of practice people pleaser, I used to always turn up for things and do things because I was afraid to say no. So I started to say no for the right reasons, and I started to say yes for the right reasons. So that when I was with somebody, whether I was with them for 5 minutes or 5 hours, it wouldn't have made no difference. They would have felt eternity in that time, because I would have made it a point to be absolutely present. No phones, no distractions, no distracting thoughts, no interferences with entanglements, you know, with other things. It was just me and the person I was with. And I found that very profound. I just noticed that people were doing a lot of things that they didn't want to do. They were doing them because they were convention, and they weren't enjoying them, and they weren't present. But everybody was happy because they would kind of say, well, you know, we've turned up. I saw my mum, or I saw my dad, or I saw my kids, but they just weren't present. So now when I'm with somebody, I disappear everything. In other words, I focus myself completely on that person. So that's all I'm doing. That's all I'm thinking about. So my raison d'etre, my purpose, my logos is just the time I'm with that person. And if you do that properly, you step outside of time. You step into the truth. You step into what the truth is, which is the absolute.
Thank you for that. And you're right. I think, you know, if anything positive has come out of the last year, the pandemic, it is to make us more contemplative, to think about what truly matters in our lives. Do you think it's also potentially making us more empathetic and even telepathy is what I'm trying to say? Because the masks, for example, you can't read people's faces as much. You've got to sense things about people now.
I think you're right. I think those attributes are all there. We don't see them because we've got too much noise. The Buddhists would call it obscurations. We have so many obscurations that we can't see the truth. In Buddhism, they say there are no problems. The only problem is believing that there's a problem. But they say there is a clear view, and the clear view can't be seen because we are so busy with our noisy ambitions, with our need to have more followers, with our need to have more money or to have more security, our need to be liked, you know, our need to leave a mark. And, you know, the big one at the moment is our need to leave a legacy. I don't want to leave a legacy. I don't want people to remember me. I don't want people to know me. If they know me, then it's too small. I want something to come through me that's much bigger than me. I don't care whether people remember me. I don't care about legacy. I want to get rid of all of that noise and just concentrate on what is true. And I think you're absolutely right. People have been kinder. They've had moments of truth, moments of inspiration, where they genuinely connect to spirit and they genuinely go outside and they clap for the NHS and all that. And even if that's only temporary, you know, they've been able to see it. So when somebody's inspired or they feel empathy or they experience telepathy, they connect to the absolute, even if it's just for a few seconds. So when we connect to the absolute, that is truth. We feel truth. So if this situation is making people access truth, stop the busy life, stop the noisy ambition, stop looking for security in a temporal world, and start looking at what it is they really, really want to do, how they really want to live, they start to experience moments of inspiration. And those moments of inspiration, when they are literally in spirit, show them truth. So if I can, as Eckhart Tolle would say, if I can experience 5 minutes of truth, I can extend that 5 minutes to an hour. I can expand that hour to, you know, to a day, or I can start to try and expand it over time, so that my whole life is based in love and empathy. So we're seeing it all the time. So we stop thinking selfishly, which never sates us, and we start to think from a selfless place. So we start to receive in order to share, instead of receiving in order to try and find some kind of validation or security. So I think you've absolutely hit on the truth. People are experiencing empathy. When you experience empathy, that's an attribute of God. So if God is in that attribute, then God is that attribute, and the absolute is in that attribute as well. So we feel God through empathy. We feel God through telepathy. We feel God through inspiration. We feel God through kindness. The biggest thing we feel God through is compassion. But we can't do that while we're very busy and very noisy, trying to create something or make something from our life. This is a working classroom. It's a working gymnasium. It's the place where even the Buddhas come to perfect the way, because it is a difficult. This is a difficult Ironman course, this world. So we're here to perfect. We're not here to collate. We're not here to, we're not here to collect things. We're not here to try and find security. We're here to try and find truth, which obviously is the nature of this. And the truth is undeniably right in front of us all the time. But we won't see it until either we make ourselves sit still, or the universe conspires to force us into a situation where, at the moment the universe is saying, you've been very naughty, go and sit on the stairs and be quiet for a bit. Well, I think it is doing that. It's saying, yeah, have a minute, step back, have a look at all of this illusory stuff you're chasing, you know, and let me introduce you to truth. Maybe you will have to see it through somebody suffering or somebody dying, but, you know, as who was that wonderful philosopher, the Greek one, Aeschylus, said, you know, those who learn suffer. You know, when we actually slow down and become quiet and we see and we see truth, we suffer because it's suddenly going, oh God, I've been chasing a phantom for all of my life. I've been so busy trying to find security. I've not looked at the people around me that really need my help, that really need my connection. And that's painful. You know, learning is painful because when we learn new things, of course, the old things that we offered us some kind of pseudo security have to be eschewed. We have to get rid of them. So when we see the truth, and the truth is there all the time, it's a constant. It's very painful. I think it might have been you that asked me, or somebody asked me, what does it feel like to be woke? I said, it feels painful. When I first started to wake up, I lost 95% of my social circle because people just didn't understand me anymore.
No. And listening to you, Jeff, I know what I'm hearing is true. Well, it's true, resonates for me, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, I just feel calm. Because normally when I do interviews, because I'm quite a sort of a frenetic person, I'm worrying about the timing and what am I going to ask next. I actually realise that with you, I'm not even thinking about that.
Oh, good.
So thank you.
I give it over, Teresa. Before I come and speak to you, I talk to God. I may talk to him through one of my envoys, to one of the angelic forces. And I'll just say, I don't know nothing. I just don't know anything. I'm so limited. Please work through me. Please let Teresa's listeners hear you through me. Let me be a vessel for you. So I get myself out of the way, and I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm not in a binary place where I'm going to say, oh, well, I know I'm going to say this, or I'm going to try and say that. I'll just go there, and I'll allow it to spontaneously come through me. So hopefully the truth will speak. Hopefully it will speak through me, but it'll also sit just above the room, so that it can meet anybody. If it's somebody that's just looking for a basic level of inquiry, then hopefully something will inspire them. And if it's somebody that's looking for something a bit more complicated, or a bit more in depth, a bit more quantum, or a bit more esoteric, you know, hopefully it'll hit them as well. So I don't ever try to concern myself about what I'm going to say or anything else. Exactly like you said, I just sit there and allow it to come through.
That's channeling, and is a word you could use.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's about when you recognise that when I receive in order to give, of course, it has to be processed through every one of my trillions of cells. So I feel sated. I feel completed. I feel in connection with truth myself, because I have to bring it through and process it before I give it to you. So then I think, oh, this is how I want to live. So I dedicate my life to making myself a better vessel. As Gandhi advised me once, I spoke to Gandhi in a meditation, and I said, Gandhi, how can I improve? He said, make yourself small. And what he meant
was, why do we find that so hard? Because I know with myself, I'm going to be honest, I said, this year has been mind-blowing for me. I've been forced to rethink everything about myself. I mean, I'm always doing that anyway, but this year especially, and what you're saying, you know, I've got to get myself out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, Teresa Chung, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely, you're right. It's make yourself small. I spoke to two people, Teresa. I spoke to Gandhi in a meditation, and I spoke to Uri Geller on the phone. Gandhi said to me, make yourself small. In other words, get the personality Jeff Thompson out of the way. This isn't about you. This is just about you being a vessel for me. And if you do that, you'll be completed by it as well. And then I spoke to Uri Geller. This was some years ago. My friend was doing some film work with him, and I spoke to him on the phone. And I said to him, Uri, how do you think I can improve? He said, you need to expand. We're both saying the same thing. So Uri Geller was saying to me, if you expand your consciousness, your awareness, your ego will automatically contract. And Gandhi was saying to me, if you contract your ego and get yourself out of the way, your consciousness will automatically expand. So we expand through contraction. We contract through expansion. Now, I was able to access Gandhi, even though he's not physically around anymore, because if we're able to let go of a binary way of living, and connect to this this quantum element of ourselves, we can connect to anybody, anywhere, at any time, through you know, in any age, it's there, it's in the noosphere. We can connect to them, but not if we're working from a small personality called Jeff Thompson, who needs to have followers, or who needs to earn a certain amount of money, you know, or who needs to be seen to be a bestseller, whatever it is. That just shrinks everything. So my job is about making myself small, so that when God comes through me, he doesn't come through filters and layers of egoic Jeff Thompson. He needs to just come through a vessel that is not going to second guess what he wants me to say.
So the
contraction and the expansion are the same.
It's really interesting you mentioned Yuri, because as I say, he used to live close by me, and I went round to his house once. I'm sort of vaguely in touch with him on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
I find him quite a contradiction.
Yeah.
Because he was like one of the most famous people on the planet mm-hmm. at one point. And he knows everybody who's famous.
Yeah.
Well, he seems to know everyone. And I found spending time with him, this was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That it was like the persona of Yuri. I couldn't get to know him.
Yeah. But
did you find that, or do you think he's changing?
We see what we need to see, Teresa.
Yeah.
But when we turn up, it's not about him.
It's about,
it's about what we see. So if I turn up to meet somebody who's got something for me, and I go, God, what? I can't learn from this guy. He's such a contradiction, or he's really overweight, or there's an unkindness to him, or you know, if that brings out a reaction in me, then God, that's what God wants me to see. So it's kind of like a litmus test. If I bring out any judgment, or you know, any negative feelings, that means that person is my teacher. You know, he's brought that out of me. So I'm very aware that God will often turn up in my life in one of his contradictory disguises. So I don't really look at what they're doing wrong. I look at what it brings up in me. So if it brings up a negative feeling or a judgment, then that person is my teacher. If I can go there and look at this person without denotation, what Rumi says, let's meet in the place. He said that there's a field beyond right and wrong, beyond good and bad. Let's meet there. So this field beyond right and wrong, beyond contradiction is where we need to meet. So eventually we're able to go and see through all of these house ghosts. Someone like Yuri Geller, whether it's conscious, whether he does it consciously or not, will allow you to see all of his flaws and all of his contradictions and all of his hypocrisies, just in order to send you away, because that's the house ghost. If we still have those emotions, we won't get to see what's actually there. What I like about Yuri, and I don't know him, I only spoke to him once, and what he gave me was profound, but I like the fact that when he bends a spoon, there's lots of controversy about whether or not that he can do that. But when he does that, it's not just the fact that he's bending a spoon, it's the fact that he's defying known science.
Yes.
And that is automatically attacked. So I'm interested in that. And I'm interested in that. I don't know him. He's just a friend of a friend. And he spent a very short time with me on the phone. He was very efficient. He showed me what I needed to see, and then he put the phone down. It was amazing. I might have stumbled for an hour trying to get that information out to somebody. He gave it me in one line. So I found that when I spoke to him, God, I was obviously in the right place at that time, because I have been to other people and gone away again and thought to myself, I can't learn nothing from this bloke. He's just interested in money. But the fact that I thought he was just interested in money was just a house ghost. I didn't see what I was meant to see, because that was an obscuration in my way. So if I can go without any kind of prejudice, without any kind of judgment, and just look, I will find the truth right in front of me. So what I see in people, if it brings out a negative emotion, which often it does, because I'm still on the path the same as everybody else, then I'll go, that's, you know, that person is my teacher.
And I guess for someone to be a teacher, they don't have to be perfect. We have this idea of, you know, people we look up to having to be perfect, you know. You know, you can learn so much from people on their journey as well. Thank you for that. And I do know that Yuri's going very, very spiritual now. That's the direction that I see him going into now.
A good teacher. I remember my friend getting invited to America to work with this pastor for 2 weeks. And I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning this, but when he came back, he just kept saying to me that we did this wrong and he said that wrong. And I noticed he was like this and I didn't think he was that spiritual. And I said, you're completely missing the point.
Yeah.
I said, this guy is just drawn out all of your negatives, all of your judgments and views like a poultice. He's a great teacher because he doesn't care whether you like him or not. He doesn't care whether you think he's a hypocrite. He has drawn out your prejudices. I said, he's a great teacher. I said, all I'm hearing from you is ingratitude, that he is a great teacher. But we have to be able to see that. I'm lucky because I've got my wife who is so grounded. She's like an oak. And if I say something, I'll say, that guy on the television, something I said for about 10 years ago, that guy on the television, I said, he drives me mad. He's talking about film and he's just destroying people. And she just looked at me and said, what is it about him that you don't like in yourself? And I said, and I tried to wriggle out of it. I said, that's just not me. I wouldn't criticize films like that. She said, Jeff, every time you come out of the cinema, you criticize a film. He's just got the courage to do it in public. And I said, yeah, you're right. And it was. And then one day I bumped into him in BAFTA. I was in BAFTA when I was working heavily in film. And he was sat there and I wanted to go up and hug him because I felt he was such a great teacher for me. And I said to my wife, I said, you wouldn't believe how much he's changed. I said, I saw him. I heard him. I said, he's so gentle. There's such a kindness to him. And she looked at me and she said, he hasn't changed at all, Jeff. She said, you've changed. So a good teacher will bring out all of our negatives as well as our positives. And he doesn't really care whether you like him or judge him because he's beyond that. So it's this lovely verse again from Rumi. Let's meet. There's a field beyond right and wrong. Let's meet there. So I really like that idea, that beyond denotation, which is what the Buddha said as well. I'm one of his students said to him, what does it feel like to be enlightened? He said, I've been freed from denotation by consciousness. So consciousness, awareness, expansion has shown him that beyond the names and the labels and the precepts and the concepts and, you know, there is just pure, beautiful energy. And then it's just a matter of us creating the right filters so that we can bring it through. And if we learn something, then we can become Bodhidharmas, which is what you are, which is what I am. And a Bodhidharma is somebody that escapes from a burning building and then realizes when he recovers himself that there are people still in the building who don't know how to get out. So he goes back into the building and says, listen, I've found a way out. If you want to, I'll show you where it is. I'll show you how I got out. So the Bodhidharma is someone that shows people what they've learned. They don't have to be perfect. You know, if we're looking for perfection in people, in men, we're not going to see it. But what we can do is if we allow people in the world to be a mirror, they will show us where the imperfections are in us. So if I look at some, like my friend who... when I spoke to him about this particular pastor, when we got down to the root of it, he was actually afraid to trust anybody. He was afraid of being duped by people that believed in God. Even though he was a spiritual guy, he just, part of him just kept thinking, you know, it's not real, it's not true. That's why when I look at your work, I look at what you do. I love what you do. I love the courage you have to bring your stuff forward and, you know, and to say to people that there are angelic beings out there and they are guiding us. Listen, I know that's true because I have three in my bedroom that stand with me that you can call them angels or you can call them Dharma protectors. It doesn't really matter, but they are there. I see them. They are visible to me and they guard me and they protect me. But they also, because I have a covenant with God, they also make sure that, you know, that I find a lunch, that I get transport, that there's a roof over my head. They make sure that the means are looked after as well. So it's having the courage to do that from whatever position we're in. And if we're really courageous, a good teacher will allow us to see our imperfections in them so that we can go away and go, you know, that contradiction's in me. That's something I'm going to work on.
Do you know, this is so true personally for me as well. You know, the people that trigger me, you know, are ones that teach me the most. And that's been the last 5 years, I would say, that's been my journey of learning. And what your friend was saying about feeling disillusioned with the spiritual movement, with what's happening, and it's all helping me work out and understand myself better and trying to get that humility. Thank you for highlighting that. And I guess I see my role now more as there's something unseen in our lives. And just really, it's got that simple.
Yeah.
I don't know the answers. I don't know if you do interviews and people want you to give them the answers. And I'm increasingly now, when people ask me these questions, I don't know. I'm feeling comfortable with saying, I don't know, however.
But also they want proof, and your yes. job isn't to provide proof. Their job is to find their own proof. You know, their job is to find it themselves. And again, if you, just for instance now, if you ask me, just say to me, Jeff, what is truth? Just ask me.
Okay, Jeff, what is truth? I hear
you. Did you feel it?
I yeah. felt it, yeah. And I hear you, and thank you from my heart for that. That's the best answer I think I will get from this entire season, because there are people from all walks of life that I'm asking this question, because it just seems to be, it's like the world at the moment is forcing this confrontation with this for us to confront our own truths and what is true. I mean, what are your thoughts, especially about, you know, like social media and the misinformation out there right now, and how that's splitting us in two, causing such conflict and confusion? What do you think's going on there?
I think it's good for us, because, you know, there is so much misinformation now. There are so many different stories, and there's so many people, you know, who are saying this is true, well, this is true. It's forcing us to go, well, you know, like, this is what happened to me in the martial arts, for instance. I had the gods of martial arts telling me what efficacy was in practical martial arts. The gods, these were people that you never questioned, you know. I knew they were lying. But if they weren't lying, they weren't telling the truth, or they didn't know the truth. And the only way I found the truth about martial efficacy was to actually go into an environment that demanded martial efficacy. So the only way for us to, you know, all of this confusion in the world is good for us, because eventually we will go, well, I'm not going to get the truth out there, and someone's not going to hand it to me on the plate. I have to be my own proof. I have to feel it. And to do that, we have to let go of all of the things we believe are true and place ourselves in an environment that will teach us the truth. So standing on the nightclub door, as coarse as this might sound, taught me what martial efficacy was, because the environment was alive. It was actually a being. It was a conscious being. It said, this is Jeff Thompson. This is what he's here to learn. And the environment taught me. Sometimes people spoke to me and guided me, but it was actually the environment that said, as soon as I stood on that door with all my martial arts grades and with all of my qualifications and all of my followers, this environment just spat it out. And it wasn't like any kind of judgmental thing. It was just saying, that won't fit here. If you let go of everything you think you know, I'll show you the truth. And I learned on a shitty little nightclub in Coventry, I learned the truth about martial efficacy. And that spread like a wave right across the world. Within a few years, I was in Las Vegas teaching for 500 of the top black belts in the world. And I was invited personally by Chuck Norris, because he felt that truth, even though it occurred in a tiny little nightclub in Coventry that nobody really knew about. So the truth is there. We just have to place ourselves in an environment where we need the truth. So in that environment, if I didn't have the truth, I might die. Four of my friends were actually murdered in that environment during the time I worked. And that obviously, martial efficacy wasn't the main thing that I learned. The main thing I learned from that environment was that all of these monsters that turned up to attack me and fight me were projections from my own shadow. I was creating them, but not. I was creating them unconsciously. I was creating the substructure and the infrastructure, and I was creating the monsters, and they were turning up. And then I was developing skills and techniques to defend myself against the very monsters that I'd created. When I realized that, I stopped trying to fix the nightclub and fix the world. I turned inwards and started to work in, and I started to clean up and individuate all of those shadows as they rose. And I converted them into something beautiful, which is the books, the films, the articles, you know, the talks. But I had to go into an environment which demanded nothing but truth. And I was shown the truth. I was shown that this whole reality that I'd created on a nightclub door was created from my shadow side, but it was unconscious. And when I realized that and I stopped putting my attention into needing to defend myself, believing that the world couldn't be trusted, believing that the world was violent, when I stopped doing that and started to work on love and service and healing, not only did the infrastructure disappear, because all of those nightclubs I worked in, now they're not physically there now, they're gone. You know, one of them's a hairdresser's and one of them's a hotel. And so when I stopped investing in the thing, in the negative things, they just dissolved. So I realized I was creating, maintaining and dissolving the realities that were around me. So my life now consists of what we're doing now, talking or writing or, you know, passing on my learning from what I've experienced. So people, if there's chaos in the world and there's a massive amount of disinformation, it's good. That is a benign force saying, I'm going to give you so much information, you won't know which way to turn. But there is one way to turn if you want to find the truth, and that is inwards, and you will find your own unique truth. That's why we can't give people our proof, because God is going to give each one of us an individual prescribed truth that will enable us to fulfill our dharma in this world. So I could say to you, this is my truth, but it wouldn't really help you. It might inspire you and it might send you on a path of inquiry, which is good. But until you find your own truth, which is unique to you, which will come from the internal schematic, from the internal matrix, all the other proof in the world isn't going to help you. Because the moment you provide something, someone's going to, you know, find 10 ways of disproving it. But I'll tell you what, Teresa, when you turn up with the truth, nobody questions it because it's felt. They feel it.
I feel it now, Jeff. I really do. And I'm praying that everyone listening feels it too. I can't thank you enough for your wisdom. And you're one of the most fascinating people I've interviewed. And there have been many I've interviewed.
You've
really touched my heart and soul. Thank you, Jeff, from my heart. Where can people find out about you? And are you working on another book or project? I know the Divine CEO was your last one.
I'm working on a book called 99 Reasons to Forgive. And it's all about the metaphysics of forgiveness, the power of forgiveness, what forgiveness actually is. I'm currently looking for a publisher for that. So I'm talking to a couple of different people. So I've just finished that. And I'm, you know, just adding little bits and pieces and polishing it. I've just written another film as well about repentance, but again, from a very muscular perspective, from a very honest perspective, from a very vulnerable perspective, because I've recognized that when people are vulnerable, when people are suffering, they meet at a place of truth, because the ego is so decimated that all that's left is the truth. So it's I'm working on that film at the moment. But the main thing is I'm just trying to place this book, 99 Reasons to Forgive. And it's the title is inspired by the 99 names of Allah in the Quran. Each of these names is an attribute or a word that acts as a vibration to dissolve whatever our woes are. You know, so like Yaqeen is one of the 99 names, and it means certainty. When we hit certainty, we hit truth. And when we hit truth, everything that's not truth is dissolved. Everything in the proximity of it will be dissolved. So so that's what's coming to me at the moment. And the
that's
reason
going
that came to
get
me
published.
Yes, it feels like there's someone out there waiting to hear from it, and they'll find me, I'm sure, or I'm looking for them as well.
And where can people find out about you?
The only place I'm current online is on the Instagram. I've got a lovely girl called Gabriella who runs that for me, and I put all my work onto there. So it's Jeff_Thompson_ Jeff Thompson. I can't even remember my
own. I know, I always forget my handles as well. I will put it in the show notes. But you,
They'll get it if they put my name into it anyway.
And you can be found on Amazon, of course, all your books.
Yeah, all the books are on Amazon. Yeah, they can get all the books on Amazon, and they can get them through bookshops as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. And just before you go, I ask each of my guests this, because one path for truth for me personally is I've always loved music. I think it's the language of the divine spirit. And I'm asking each of my guests, because I'm trying to sort of create an orchestra. If you could be a musical instrument, what would it be?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. Well, I would say that I am already a musical instrument, because I'm aware that when I speak through the throat, in Islam they would call it the shofar, the trumpet. So, and the trumpet is an allegory for the throat. So when the voice comes out of the throat, it is music.
Interesting that you say healing. Trumpet, because angels play harps.
Yeah, that's true. And some of them
everybody
play trumpets.
Everybody thinks angels play harps.
They play trumpets,
but
don't
actually
they?
In the Old Testament, what we've... Yeah, so yeah. Well done. I've got my angel. Jeff, thank you from my heart.
And listen, I love what you do. I love your books. I love your message. It's such a beautiful and brave message. And it's so true as well. I really love what you do. So that's why I'm really grateful to share this platform with you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you from my heart for being here and walking beside me in spirit on White Shores. Sensitive, kind, and compassionate souls like you who see beyond the material are needed more than ever today to help the world heal. Thank you to Clan Ree for the blissful episode music, and do check out the show notes for all details about this episode and my contact details. I'm going to say goodbye for now with a musical or literary offering, a piece of heaven for you to take away and store in your heart as you return refreshed to your one precious life. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude.